This is podcast number 91 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. Hi, I'm Marlene Peterson, and today I'm talking about how to build truthfulness in our children. Truthfulness. It is an interesting circumstance that parents and teachers so frequently ask, how shall we teach children to tell the truth? And so seldom inquire, how shall we teach children to be truthful? For the second question would seem to be not of greater but of prior importance. Children must first be taught to be truthful, then taught to tell the truth, if necessary, for a truthful child usually learns for himself to tell the truth. It does not necessarily follow that a child who tells the truth learns so easily, so naturally, to be truthful. What is the distinction? The difference between telling the truth and being truthful, what is it? It is a very simple thing, namely the difference between saying and being. A person who tells the truth says what is true. A person who is truthful is what is true. A confusion of mind with regard to this so apparently obvious distinction is the cause not only of much untruth in grown persons, but of more than half of the lack of truth-telling in children. Truth-telling is taught with very great difficulty to children who have not first been given an understanding of truth-doing. By children who have gained this understanding, truth-telling is a habit very easily formed. How shall we best teach the children, then, the essential nature of truthfulness? By the use of stories, the heroes and heroines of which are true. There are many such, and paradoxically enough, the very best of them are fairy tales, or other stories of pure fancy. Oddly enough, a story which, as many as any other in the world, teaches the lesson of truth most profoundly is entitled The Comedy of Errors. How is this? Simply for the reason that with the innumerable chances for disaster in the story, owing to the many occurrences and assertions too strange to be believed by the several persons concerned, it ends triumphantly. And why? Simply because all the persons in it were true, to themselves, to one another, and to the facts as known, and this in the face of strong temptations to be false. Of course, also, they spoke the truth. True persons, unless very little children indeed, are apt to speak the truth. The result was not a tragedy, as might reasonably have been expected, and would certainly have occurred had any of the persons been untrue, but instead an altogether pleasant and diverting comedy of errors. Every child should have the advantage not only of reading once, but of reading many times this story entails from Shakespeare. Incidentally, it teaches another important lesson relating to truth, that is to say, the possibility of mistaking truth for falsehood. A thoughtful child acquainted with the comedy of errors will be less prone than a child lacking such acquaintanceship to doubt the truth of what is unusual and unexplainable. He will be ready to think that there may be more in a situation than he is able to see. A child of my acquaintance has to thank this story for an early learning of just that lesson. He is a little boy of 8, a newcomer to the neighborhood. One day, recently, he came home from school without his muffler, a red and blue striped article of home manufacture. "I don't know what became of it," he explained to his mother. "I left it in the dressing room this morning, and this noon it wasn't there." The next day he returned home in great excitement. "I know where my muffler is," he cried. "The boy that lives around the corner took it. I saw him with it on." This accusation led to considerable neighborhood disturbance. The only fact that could be ascertained was that the boy who lived around the corner was indeed wearing a blue and red striped home knitted muffler. Fortunately, before the agitation reached the point of application to his parents, the matter came to the attention of the school teacher of both children, and she made an investigation. This resulted in the finding of the lost muffler in a corner of the dressing room, and the discovery that, while similar to that of the accused boy, it really was slightly different. "Before you say again that someone has taken something that you have lost," the teacher admonished the loser of the muffler, "remind yourself that there may be more than one in the world. Did you suppose," she added, in order to emphasize the lesson, "that you were the only boy on earth with a red and blue striped muffler?" The boy said nothing, but it was evident, later, that he had given the matter considerable thought, for it was at least 2 months later that his mother chanced to read aloud to him from Lamb's Tales, the comedy of errors. He listened with the most eager interest. When the story was ended, his sole comment was, "How much trouble might have been kept from happening if anybody had remembered that a good many times there is more than one of anything, either people or mufflers." To be true to his word, there is another form of truthfulness that a child should learn and begin to practice at a very early age. Long before he is old enough to read, or to have read to him stories of heroes and heroines notable for truth such as this, he should have formed the habit of keeping a promise. Young children are surprisingly to be relied upon to keep their word. Indeed, it frequently perplexes parents to find that, so far from improving in this particular as they grow older, they are apt to remain stationary, or more frequently still, to deteriorate. This is not really so puzzling as it would appear, the fact of the matter being that a little child keeps promises rather more through obedience than through a definite use of the will. "Promise me you will come straight home from school," the mother says, and the child replies, "Yes, mother." What the mother has said in effect is, "Do what I tell you about coming straight home from school," and what the child says in effect is, "I will." Making and keeping a promise are different, more mature matters than a command and a subjection to that command. They are more independent, more voluntary, and like all independent and voluntary actions, they require more strength of purpose for their performance than actions less responsible. Parents and teachers, realizing this, will not be discouraged to find that children, when they come to the age at which they begin to rely on their own judgment, seem less able to keep a promise than when they were in the nursery or kindergarten. And understanding they will help them to become as obedient to their own wills as they earlier taught them to be to the wills of others in authority over them. There are many stories, both old and new, of men and women who against heavy odds have kept their promises. All these will furnish illumination and inspiration to the children, perhaps particularly those in which the promises were kept against especially heavy and most especially striking odds. One such story has to do with Sinbad, that hero dear to boys and girls alike. Returning from one of his famous voyages, he bore with him a letter written on the skin of a certain animal of great value, very scarce and of a yellowish color, in azure characters, and a present consisting of several wonderful and priceless things, among them one ruby made into a cup filled with round pearls, a present from the king of Serendib to the caliph Harun al-Rashid. In response, the caliph desired Sinbad to return to Serendib with a letter and a present from himself, one article of which present was a rich tablet, which according to tradition belonged to the great Solomon. A perilous voyage was the price of the delivering of each one of these royal presents and epistles. But Sinbad, fearful as he had naturally become of sea voyaging, promised to deliver them, and he did. No child can follow him on his way without becoming a better promise keeper than he was before. I was saying this the other day to one of my neighbors, the mother of a little girl of mine, who has seemed to her mother less able than she was at 4 to keep a promise. "I shall read the story to her," my mother declared, "and see if it helps any." She did. For the time being, there seemed little change in her little girl in relation to keeping a promise. But only yesterday, the mother called especially to tell me that she actually had got the result desired. "I wanted to send a note and a glass of jelly to my mother," she began, "so I asked my little girl to be ready for school a little early and to leave them on her way. She said that she would. When she came home at noon, what do you think she said?" "I left the jelly and the note at Grandma's, but I pretty nearly didn't. That big dog that lives next door was in her yard, and I almost thought I shouldn't. Then I remembered Sinbad, how he kept on with the letters and presents he was taking, with elephants and cannibals around, just because he promised. So I ran as quick as I could and rang her bell and gave the things to Grandma, and by that time the dog had gone back home." Another less obvious sort of truthfulness consists not of keeping a promise to do something or not to do something, but of keeping a promise not to say something, that is to say, of keeping a secret. Grown-ups sometimes make the mistake of trying to teach children to keep a secret by telling them something not private and obtaining from them a promise not to repeat it. They do this in order to avoid the trouble that might come should the child, not yet sufficiently educated in truthfulness to keep a secret, happen to divulge the thing told. Reasonable and sensible as this would seem from one point of view, it is seldom effectual for the reason that it is in itself untruthful. A child is not really being asked to keep a secret. A better plan is, perhaps, to tell the child what might be regarded as a secret of small size, but still a bona fide secret, the telling of which, while as little to be desired as the telling of any secret, would do little rather than great harm. In brief, while the child should be asked to keep a real secret, it should be of a size suited to his age and strength. This, too, the child will best learn with the help of the personages in a story. The best of all stories for teaching this are to be found in the chapters of The Pilgrim's Progress, that finest of all secular books for the teaching of truth, truth being, truth doing, truth telling. Perhaps of all the stories of this great book, that one entitled A Visit to the House of the Interpreter will do most toward teaching children the sacredness of keeping a promise to tell nothing at all, or only so much as the confider has indicated, of a confidence. Let this story become an intimate possession of the children from the moment when Christian knocks at the door until he takes his leave, saying, "Here I have seen things rare and profitable, things pleasant, dreadful, things to make me stable, in what I have begun to take in hand. Then let me think on them and understand wherefore they showed me was, and let me be thankful, O good interpreter, to thee." Truthfulness in the sense of being true, that is the great lesson of life. To be true, this is what we must try to teach the children. And truth-telling, this will follow as the fruit, the flower. Of those who are true in being and in action, it will be found that the law of truth is written upon their lips. These, coming up to the gate of the celestial city, will meet the king who, reading their certificates, will say, "Open the gate, that the righteous nation that keepeth truth may enter in."